Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Melanie Pritchard, who is the executive director of the Foundation for Life and Love. She speaks nationwide to thousands on topics of faith, modesty, chastity, pro-life issues, and marriage. Since experiencing an amniotic fluid embolism in July of 2010, Melanie is now the Director of Communications for the AFE Foundation. With Melanie Pritchard, we go inside the pages of The Day I Died, Finding Hope in Suffering, published by Vitae Press. Melanie, thank you so much for joining me.
It's great to be here, Chris.
Your story is unbelievably compelling. Tell the audience about your story.
Well, Chris, I was pregnant with my second child, and I had no complications at all. And I went into to deliver about a week early, and I was just in the delivery room waiting, and the doctor had come, and he broke my water, and so things were progressing. And my husband, my father, and my mother, and my son, who's 2 years old, and two of my closest friends were in the room just keeping me company while we waited, and all of a sudden, all of my numbers dropped on the screen, and the nurses came running, and they called code blue, and apparently, you know, I had stopped breathing and suffered a cardiac arrest, and at the same time, my daughter's numbers just dropped completely. Mm-hmm. So they called code blue, and all the doctors and nurses that were there just kind of came running and to the OR, and they transferred me to the OR, which was the next room over. And so I ended up having this, we discovered, you know, later that I ended up suffering from an amniotic fluid embolism, mm-hmm. which is basically amniotic fluid escapes the blood into the bloodstream and shoots to the heart. It's very rare, and it's very fatal, and very few, you know, survive. And there's two phases to it. So the first phase is cardiac arrest. And when they rushed me to the OR, this is, you know, one of the most amazing things and one of the ways in which, you know, I saw God's fingerprints all over it, mm-hmm. was that it was shift change. And so I was in a community hospital who really, you know, isn't prepared for this kind of traumatic maternal situation. But it was shift change. So all the doctors that were there from the evening, mm-hmm. and all the doctors that were coming in the morning were all there together.
Wow.
And so, I mean, I just had an incredible amount of people caring for me. And so they rushed me to the OR, and they did 10 minutes of CPR. And while they were doing CPR, they did remove my daughter via emergency C-section. And she came out, and apparently she wasn't breathing for a few minutes as well.
Wow.
But did revive her, and she, you know, she took her first big breath of air, and praise the Lord, has not stopped breathing since. So that's the, you know, the great joy in that moment. But for me, I you know, was dead, clinically dead for 10 minutes, and they had to shock me 4 times in order to revive me. And they did finally revive me. But when I did come around, I was in very critical condition. Matter of fact, they told my family to come in for the first time to come in and say goodbye to me.
Wow.
And the doctors just, you know, they knew the condition I had and that very few survive, and so they didn't foresee me surviving. And my family came in. My husband walked in. He said, you know, Ella, we named our baby. He named our baby Gabriella, mm-hmm. and we call her Ella for short.
Which means that you got to tell her tell everybody what her name means.
Gabriella means the heroine of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of two names that we had kind of on the table. And we knew when we saw her that we would know the right name for her. And so, of course, my husband was the first to see her. And, you know, he named her, and he just said, of course, it's Gabriella, the heroine of God. And so he said to me, Melanie, Gabriella is beautiful. And Brady, that's my son's name, Brady and I, we all love you so much. And we just want you to go where your guardian angel leads you, because that's where God wants you. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of just made this prayer to the Lord and said, but Lord, if I can hold my wife again, I pray for that. And And so that was his prayer. And again, you know, all of my family would come in and say goodbye. And my numbers, they did two blood transfusions. And I was going into the amniotic fluid embolism, which is DIC. It's like a blood clotting disorder. Your blood clots erratically, and it's the second, you know, it's very hard to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And they had transfused my blood twice. And all of, again, my numbers should have been rising and showing improvement, but they were going down. And this is where, again, I see God's fingerprints, is that my very own brother, you know, happens to be just a cardiothoracic surgeon who
just
specializes
happens.
In the heart and heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
So he rushed to the hospital, which was amazing, too, because he had just had a baby 5 days before me. We actually had the exact same due date, and having his baby allowed him to be off work for, you know, several days, which, you know, he sometimes he's in surgeries for, you know, 16 hours at a time and can't get anybody's phone calls and such, but he was completely free to come and be with me. And he walked in to the room, and what's interesting is that I just met with the doctors and nurses again recently, and they said, the nurses said, oh, I'm the first person that told your brother to get out. I'm the second nurse that told him to get out. And so he came in and he kind of ignored all personnel only signs and said, this is my sister and this is who I am and can I help? And luckily they did finally let him help consult with them. And one of the things that he noticed as soon as he checked my chart was that he could tell just by looking at my chart that I had internal bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so he told the doctors, and of course they don't know who he is, so, you know, they kind of took it with a grain of salt, but they did do an ultrasound, and they found indeed that I did have internal bleeding. And so they went back and to do a second surgery and reopened me up, and they did find that while they did that emergency C-section, they cut an artery. And mm-hmm. this is a really kind of a normal thing that happens in emergency C-sections. But I had no blood flow because I was, like I said, I was completely dead for 10 minutes. So the doctors even told me that my womb, my whole body was blue, but my womb was blue too.
Mm.
There was no blood flow. One of the doctors had revealed to me when I met with them recently, said, Melanie, I don't know how you survived. You were deader than dead. And they just said that point where there was just no even thought that we could revive you back. But we did. And so this artery had to be stitched, and they stitched it, but the problem was is that they gave me so much blood product that it just spilled into my abdomen. And so all of this liquid had to be absorbed, so they basically packed my stomach full of towels to absorb the liquid.
Wow.
Then they left the towels in there, and they couldn't stitch me up. Because I was so bloated that my body just had grown so much that they couldn't even begin to stitch me. So they left me open with a risk of infection on a table for over a day. So I was just kind of wide open for a very long period of time. And so before this surgery, they did tell my family to say goodbye to me again. But I did manage to survive. And at this point, my brother said to them, you know, I think she's going to have her lungs fail and her heart's going to begin to fail again, because he kind of knew the process the body would take. And so he really advised them on what kind of medications to put me on to slow that process down.
Mm-hmm.
And I did end up being on a lung respirator for 100% breathing for me. And my heart did begin to fail again. And it was basically beating at a 5% of fraction rate, which is just barely, you know, barely pumping.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, he called his friends over at the Mayo Clinic and asked the chief of cardiothoracic surgery there to come and get me and bring me to the Mayo Clinic, where they have more resources in case I had to be on complete life support. And at this point, too, they were also considering putting me on a heart transplant list. That was the greatest thing my family heard. It was like their only hope that maybe a heart transplant would allow me to survive. And so They did transfer me to the Mayo Clinic, and of course, they told my family to say goodbye. They didn't think I would survive the ride. It was an hour-long trip in a monsoon, nonetheless, mm-hmm. in Arizona. And I did get to the Mayo, and I did survive the trip. And at the Mayo, they decided to just kind of wait till the next morning to do a surgery to stitch me back up. And again, they told my family to say goodbye to me before the surgery. This was the fourth time. And that time, my husband came in, and they did pull me off sedation to see if I had any brain activity. They were pretty certain that I didn't. They had even done testing to check it out, and didn't feel as though, that I was going to come back myself, that I would suffer some brain injury. But they pulled me off sedation, and they showed me a picture of my baby, Ella. Mm. And my husband said it was like he knew I was back, because the mama bear in me just kicked in, and I just started thrashing and trying to get out of all, the things that were holding me down and all the wires. And so, again, they had to sedate me, but I think he just knew in his heart that I was in there and I was a fighter, and, this is that he kind of had me back for a moment. And then if I did end up passing away in this surgery, that at least I would have seen my beautiful daughter. So I did go through the surgery, and I survived, obviously. And after that point, I started to really just miraculously start to improve. The doctors, they thought I'd probably be in the hospital for months and recovering. And I was out within 7 days because my heart just started to recover rapidly. My lungs started to recover, and I was breathing. I was doing everything I could to get up and walk and try to, show the doctors I had the strength to go home because I wanted to be with my babies. And and some nurses had come by and were hovering over me one day while I was kind of resting. And I looked up, and they were crying. And I said, well, okay, what's going on now? what else? Mm-hmm. And they said, we were your surgical nurses, and we were in there in your last surgery. And they just said, this is a miracle. We've never seen in 25 years somebody survive something like this. And they had told my other friend, who is a nurse, that they had given me a 0% chance of survival going into even that last surgery. Wow. Didn't think that I would make it. But by the grace of God, and just an incredible amount of people praying for me, I survived.
When you say incredible amount of people praying for you, I have to tell you, Melanie, I remember the experience back in July of 2010 when the great internet communicated your story in a way that I've never seen before. I remember it was in the Mark Hart, a mutual friend of ours. He put the word out, and so many others of your situation and prayer came roaring through. And as you chronicle it, in the book, The Day I Died, Finding Hope in Suffering, that in itself, that power of that prayer and the intercession of who you credit, some incredible saints, among them Blessed John Paul, it is a testament to the power of that prayer.
Absolutely, that God really hears us, hears our prayers. And I mean, when I woke up to find this out, I was shocked. Number one, I had no memory of it all. And so then my short-term memory wasn't intact. So it took my family many times to tell me what happened for me to finally grasp it. But I do remember one of the first things I grasped was how many people prayed for me. And it overwhelmed me. I just can't even begin to tell you. It just still brings tears to my eyes. They were reading me articles that were written about me. That said that I was the number one Googled person for the day in Phoenix and the top 10 people Twittered in the country. Mm-hmm. And it was just a storming of heaven for, prayers for me and for a stranger, really, for most people, even you. I couldn't myself figure out why would I get this kind of response? It was so humbling.
Well, in the book, The Day I Died, Finding Hope in Suffering, Melanie, you also chronicle the experiences of your family members, your friends. They write about what their experiences are. It's a remarkable book. It's not just a clinical explanation of what occurred to you step by step, but it's really more of the movement within of grace within someone's life and how it overflows and it affects so many other. I've never read anything quite like it before. It really is a gift to those who believe in the power of prayer, but also in that that outpouring of grace.
Yeah, I felt really inspired by the Lord. I mean, I was in a lot of pain and a long time recovery, and as I was, you know, just really rooted in prayer during that time, the Lord said, "I want you to write a book about this." You know, I knew the Lord had given me this miracle in my life, And what I do as a career is I'm a speaker. You know, I speak on chastity and pro-life and modesty. I was the education director for Arizona Right to Life for many years. So protecting, you know, women and the womb and, you know, the unborn has been my life. It's been everything to me. So then to have this happen to me was so, so incredible. So when I was really praying through what God wanted me to do, it all came out, and I wrote the book within like a month, I mean, a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And I've never written a book that fast in my whole life, but it kept pouring out. And because I didn't remember anything, and my family, when I would ask them, you know, some of them wouldn't even share. Like, it was just too hard for them to even share their account with me. That when I asked them to write it, they really could just go and hide and secret and just write it down for me, and it was beautiful. And I, like I said, I had lost my short-term memory. So for them to write it, it finally really stuck in my mind, and I was able to, like, put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And in the book, I really invite the audience of readers on a journey with me to discover really what happened. Mm-hmm. And it's through my family's beautiful experience, you know, like my brother, you know, he had the weight of the world on his shoulders as he had this incredible gift and talent in life. Now he could use to help save my life. It was my father's birthday, and his own father died on his birthday many years ago. And here his daughter was about to die, and his granddaughter was born. And it was just amazing, you know, to hear him speak of that. My sister, she had a pregnancy disaster too, where she ended up getting uterine cancer and she lost her uterus, and so she was never able to have any more children, and that was really tragic. And so hearing her experience, as she was the one that stayed with my Ella at a different hospital, being that motherly figure to her,
mm-hmm.
You know, my oldest sister, just, you know, we, and I think this speaks to all families, you know, we have at times just not communicated well and you know, not been the best of siblings. And then to hear her account of how she really felt about me, it was the first time I'd ever heard those words out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just for me, I could read it over and over. It's so, I learned the time, because it's like I'm a stranger to the whole story of anybody. I heard it last.
But it was a moment, as I think that's the great witness of how grace works, because it's never just for one individual. It usually pours out. It's such a mode of operation for God, isn't it? That it brings everybody. Like your father can look at it and see, what are you saying to me in this moment, Lord? And your brother, this is the purpose. This is the one of the reasons beyond all other things. You can just see how it all intertwines, can't you? It's a great communion, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, my family isn't... my mom was a convert to Catholicism, and she ended up really only beginning her real strong faith in Catholicism when I was in the fifth grade. And so I'm the youngest. So my other siblings, they're not... You know, we're not like this rock-solid Catholic family that was all, you know, was like this from birth. I'm really the only one like that. So to actually hear their accounts, and even my father's, and hear how they did trust in the Lord, and they came to the Lord, I was so, it just warmed my heart so much, because I know we're just like every other family, that some, you know, that everybody's kind of gone their own ways, and everybody has different personalities, but in the end, you know, what really mattered in this situation was their faith in the Lord. Mm-hmm. And some of them, I didn't even know the depths of their faith in the Lord. So the book was that even a revelation of that for me.
Well, we say that we believe in things seen and unseen, and soon we'll be saying things visible and invisible. Mm-hmm. And we have to acknowledge that reality if we are going to be able to arm ourselves. And Mark Hart is a great one who, you know, says, clothe yourselves with Ephesians 6. Get to put on your armor.
Yep.
Because that's what it is to be smart in the spiritual battle. We are called to, they give us the tools where we should use them.
And I prayed that prayer every time I went out on the front lines of a Planned Parenthood and prayed with young people. I would pray Ephesians. And I, even in the book, I sort of parallel it to my situation and how much more Ephesians means to me now as the, you know, the arrows were being thrown at me and how people, you know, picked up and prayed for me and the armor of God was upon me. And but yes, that we have to, and we have it right in front of us, right at our grasp, the power of prayer and protection. We just need to say those words, those powerful words.
What do you feel is the mission you have for the future, besides the beautiful one you have, of course, of your primary vocation and as a wife, and then, of course, the mother of these beautiful gifts that you've been given?
Well, definitely to get back to heaven, to get myself to heaven, to get my family to heaven, and to get everybody that's listening to heaven. I mean, I that was the goal before, but ever more now. I mean, you know, I just feel it in the depths of my bones. Like, I want to go out and get my neighbors to heaven, and, you know, the lady that walks by every morning, or, you know, just in the simplest way, to just start even ever more speaking about the power of God and the power of prayer. And it's really, God has really opened my eyes so much and through all of this, but also has, in sharing it, has just kind of given me the ability to share this incredible story. And I'm not kidding you. It really opens people's hearts up right away, to being able to talk more about the Lord. And I can't tell you how many people have just kind of started pouring their hearts out about how they've been distant from the Lord or stopped believing when their brother died at age 18, and, you know, and just, and then being able to talk about it and show them that, no, the Lord is here, and let's invite him, let's pray together. So definitely that is my goal, my mission. I really, I know the Lord is still, you know, calling me to continue to speak and to speak even bolder and louder on behalf of him.
I think also, Melanie, your story, as you've conveyed in the book, is one of trust. The message to trust that our prayers are heard. They may not be answered the way we expect.
Yeah, and even myself, you know, when I reveal this in the book, too, that it took me a while to get pregnant with Ella, and I trusted in the Lord, but I definitely was sad and would say, Lord, okay, you know, I don't understand, you know, why it's taking so long. I want to have 5 kids. You know, I just kept always telling the Lord my plans. And, but then here in this situation, if I had even gotten pregnant, you know, 6 days delivered 6 days earlier, my brother would have been working. He wouldn't have been able to come. You know, like everything that needed to be in place for my survival at that exact moment in that exact time was there. And God orchestrated it, I do believe. And that, you know, for those out there who have frustrations, you know, and are sad about things that they wish the Lord would bring to them and he's not, that I tell you, just wait upon the Lord. His plan is so much better and more glorious. And had I gotten, delivered even a few days earlier, I may not be here. But everything had to happen in that exact timing. And so, yes, that trust in the Lord is the real message of the book, too. And even you see it through my family and my friends and their accounts of what they say.
I think there's also the other side of hope here that you bring forward in a deeper way. That praise God that the prayers were answered and you are here to witness to his tremendous power and his glory. But also that hope that for those who have prayed the same prayers with the same type of intensity and their loved ones passed on to go to the Father. And for those who are still here, that they feel that God didn't answer their prayer.
Right.
That you're witnesses that there is more, and to continue to believe and to continue to trust. You must have encountered others in telling your story who have come to you with a broken heart that said, but what about my prayer?
Right. Oh, there's so many. And honestly, like that, I feel is one of my callings too now, is just to really embrace those that are suffering. There's so many people out there that are just suffering really, really hard circumstances. I speak about a few in the book of, you know, one who lost her 5-year-old, and she was a friend of mine, you know, kind of a friend of a friend, and just recently lost her 5-year-old, and I couldn't imagine that kind of pain. And she asked, you know, if we could come over and talk to them, and since we had some common experiences of tragedy lately, and I'm thinking to myself, well, as tragic as my situation was for my family, they lived with the thought of me dying for a day, and I can't imagine what this is doing to this mother. Like, what do I have her? And when we sat down with that family, she said to me, her and her husband said, you know, your story gives us hope. We said, how? You know, how does it give you hope? And she said, because we saw with you that God, he had the power. I mean, he could move heaven and earth to make it so that you would survive. You know, he had that plan for you. And for our daughter, he could have done the same. But he wanted her. He chose her. And that gives us hope to know that this was his plan, that he could have saved her life, but for some reason, he took it. And this is going to purify us, and it's going to glorify him. And I learned so much from other people suffering, honestly, that woman's boldness and courage in that moment to trust in God was just so enlightening for me even.
Wow. Boy, Melanie, I wish we had more time, but that's the beauty of having the book available, that people can enter into your story and to experience your beautiful heart. But also, you have a blog that's out there on the internet. So why don't you tell the folks about that so they can begin a dialogue with you if they so desire.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I wasn't really ever a blogger until all this happened. And I knew so many people prayed for me that they wanted to keep up and they wanted to hear more. And so, you know, soon after my, while I was recovering, I did start a blog, and there, you can go, you know, look at the back past, and it really goes through the last year and telling, you know, where I've been since death, you know, and this revival and where the Lord has taken me and just been building me up through all of this. So it's www.melaniepritchard.org. And there's blogs, there's other information about me. And definitely people can dialogue with me.
Mm. God bless you, my dear, and your entire family, and strengthen you as well to be able to go out and fight that glorious fight he's asked you to participate in. It's just, it's tremendous, your witness.
And Chris, I have to tell you, I forgot, this is the best part, is that God made all things new, and I am fully recovered. Everything
Praise
about
God.
Me is perfectly normal and healthy and fine, which is the greatest miracle of this all.
Well, to whom much is given, much is expected.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you. And again, we just ask God to continue to pour out his tremendous blessings on you, your husband, and your beautiful children.
Thank you.
With Melanie Pritchard, we've gone inside the pages of The Day I Died, Finding Hope in Suffering. To learn more about this book, visit Melanie's blog at melaniepritchard.org. Or you can find the book at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, go to www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.